Yes, so says Jehovah. I am prolonging in her peace, just like a river, inundating her with a flood of the glory of nations. You will suck and be lifted up in her arms, and on her knees you will be fondled. Let's read that again. Yes, so says Jehovah, I am prolonging in her peace, just like a river, inundating her with a flood of the glory of nations. You will suck and be lifted up in her arms, and on her knees you will be fondled. That's Isaiah 66 and 12 from the Word Green Version of 2003, our daily scripture for today, little children. And there's a lot of encouragement here in this scripture. I am prolonging in her peace just like a river. Peace just like a river. Does that sound like a state that would be achieved using drugs? I don't think so. Peace just like a river. You will suck and be lifted up in her arms, and on her knees you will be fondled. It's a natural relationship of a mother and child being talked about there. There's no drugs there, right? So why is this, you know, tendency of people to promote drugs? You know, I mean, I think it's relevant because it's so common and prevalent in our times, but it always was probably too, especially for people who want to be pure in their body, because those people will find that there are people who feel threatened by that, and they are going to be then putting pressure on the faithful ones. And you know, it happened to me when I was wanting to be pure and stay away from drugs when I was in my younger days. The pressure was put on me by the people who were, and it's not like the kind of pressure that you think. Let's look at 2 Thessalonians, shall we? If you want to understand this, this is the best explanation of many, many things. Chapter 2 of 2 Thessalonians. It's verses 9 and 10. But the lawless one's presence is according to the operation of Satan. Now look at this part. With every powerful work and lying signs and portents. So it's not like it's a powerful work necessarily threatening you, but a powerful work telling lies, right, and giving portents. And with, in verse 10, every unrighteous deception. That's the part I wanted to highlight there. Just imagine every unrighteous deception, and then ask yourself whether it seems like an unrighteous deception, the idea of using a mind-altering substance. It doesn't have to be drugs. It could be alcohol. Anything that alters the way the mind works and that limits the natural, or prevents the natural functioning of the neurons in the brain, of the natural mental processes. I mean, this is what we have to figure out for ourselves, each of us, is what foods and what substances can we use to do different things. For example, there's a wonderful substance called DLPA. It's possibly approved by God, but each one has to decide that. I mean, we don't know for sure whether anything's approved by God, but the idea here is freedom, too. Freedom from deception, right? Freedom. Part of freedom is being free from deception. And you can't be free from deception if you're using something that's altering your mind. That's the problem. But DLPA is this phenylalanine, PA, that's consisting of two different amino acids, the D and the L, standing for the two names of the amino acids. One of which is a very powerful painkiller, and the other one is a very beautiful, it's just a natural amino acid, which is a food, but it elevates the mood and makes you feel really good without altering your brain function, you know, in such a way as to, you know, pervert it. And it doesn't go through the liver like all these other things. Like, for example, marijuana has a half-life in the liver of some, I forget the number, maybe 40 days or something, where it will take 30 or 40 days for the amount of marijuana in your liver, the THC part of the active ingredient, that is, the tetrahydrocannabinol, to be reduced in the liver by one half. It takes 30 or 40 days for the amount of THC to be reduced by one half in your liver. So it's a poison that the liver is removing from your body. If it has to go to the liver, then that's really another way. Then it's a poison. If it has to go to the liver, it's a poison. And that's how we know, really, that I suppose also we might consider some types of sugar as poison, because they have to go through the liver too. Although that's not the only thing that identifies something as a poison. But really, it's all about this idea of freedom is what it's about. And when you're enslaved by something, right, you start to identify with your slave driver, right, or with your, like, kidnapped victims become, is what's it called, the Copenhagen syndrome? I forget what, it's some type of syndrome that you identify with your captor. So people who use drugs, they don't see things clearly anymore, and they start to promote the drugs themselves and say it's the best thing, and they try to get other people to do it too. That's the way you act. And you, when you're on drugs, you act that way, and you can't ever see what it's like to be off drugs unless you get off the drugs. That's when you start to see it. You can't understand, and let's talk about spirituality. You can't understand what spirituality is either. Most people, even anybody, but especially when you're under the influence of a substance, you'll never understand what true spirituality is, because it comes from a pureness, like a virgin mind, right? Like a virgin. A man wants to marry, a priest especially, wants to marry a virgin because, well, it used to be a command that priests had to marry virgins in the Bible. But a priest wants to marry a virgin because that is the absolute, well, I'm trying to think of the reasoning behind it. Well, it's obvious, right? You don't want to have to, it's like a corruption. It's the corruption that comes from, it's like the pollution or the corruption that a poison would introduce into the brain if you took a mind-altering substance. It's a poison that alters the brain, and then how do you get back to the way it was, right? It's very difficult to get back to the way it was when all these other influences are there from whatever other things are there, whatever poison is there. And a virgin doesn't have those things, those influences, those poisons. So a man marrying a virgin, he can now, you know, not just experience the pleasure of being with his wife in the most natural way, but also he can put information and teaching into his wife. He can teach his wife from a clean perspective, a clean slate perspective, where she's not already got these ideas about how everything works with regard to how her husband should or shouldn't be and all these things. So it was true of marital relationships too, the idea of a virgin, and we should be, with regard to our own brains, we want our brains to be virgins with regard to the use of substances. So if we unfortunately have become involved with substances in the past, we need to, you know, purge that concept from our brains. And we can teach about this all day long, but we have other things to study too. I mean, it's not the only teaching in the Bible, but a drug addict will never see, as long as they're on the drugs, they'll never see the other viewpoint. They just cannot. It's impossible for them to, or they're unwilling. It's not that it's impossible, but it is impossible because they're already poisoned. It's like, you know, you've got to get. I'm trying to think of another analogy. There are probably many analogies you have to get free of it first, you know. But it's like being in prison, you know. You're not going to be the same as when you're free. Now, it's a lot different being free from being in prison. And people who are free, many of them, the ones who end up going to prison, they can't really manage or handle being free. They can't actually cope with being free. It's too much for them, right? And so that's why they turn to using drugs in some cases. And as we've been talking about, you know, the drugs are this prison that they can be in that takes some of the burden off of their being free. But the power of being free is incredibly powerful, to be free, right? It's now when you're free, you can get spirituality. But it's not this mystical experience. Spirituality is not a mystical experience where, oh, I'm having a revelation and all. It's not. That can sometimes happen when you might have a realization on occasion, right, where you realize something about the truth. That's not, it's an epiphany, you know. You can have epiphanies. People who are using drugs, they have these epiphanies that turn out to be deceptive. That's the problem. They're always deceptive, but just keep in mind that scripture, that there's every unrighteous deception that Satan is trying to use, and then figure out which are the unrighteous deceptions. Well, simple is better, right? So get clean is simpler and it's better. Sumerian account of silver for the governor. But how do you get these spiritual thoughts like that? What's spirituality? I think we don't have to lose contact or touch. We never have to lose our. This thing, yeah, okay. We never have to lose our power of reason to be spiritual. That's a huge point. Our power of reason remains intact when we're gaining spirituality. Spirituality is not beyond the power of reason, so it doesn't involve the modifying of the mental state by using some poison. And there are many different drugs used for that purpose, right? Sorry about that. I just bumped something. I mean, there are many things, many substances people use. Ayahuasca, I guess, is one, right? Well, there's many. There's LSD. There's a long list of all these drugs. And, of course, marijuana is one of them, too. Now, people try and claim that marijuana is a good one, but it's one of the poisons that goes to the liver and has to be eliminated by the body as a poison. And, of course, the problem with, you know, so THC is the ingredient in that one. But the problem with all of these things is they're all really basically different forms of the same thing. They're trying to masquerade as, you know, a great gift of God, right? And people say, oh, yeah, God created these things. Well, there's such a thing as abusing the creation. There's such a thing as abusing what was created and using it for the wrong purpose, using something in the wrong way. That's a fact, too. That's possible. Very easy to use something in the wrong way, right? It's easy to stub your toe, is that using it in the right way? So, I mean, it's not obvious how to use these things, and saying that these things are a gift of God is a deceptive. You notice it's a deceptive teaching because it appears to have some possible validity to some people, right? That's the idea. And it can be very persuasive, in fact, as an argument. But DLPA is another substance. In this case, it's just an amino acid type, food type substance. One of the amino acids is the mirror image of the natural form. So, you know, someone, if you don't want to take it, you don't have to take it. It's not a completely natural substance. But the thing is, it doesn't have any, as far as we know, deleterious effects. It doesn't have any addictive component to it. In fact, it's the opposite. You become, it requires less the more you take it. And it's also better than morphine as a painkiller, DLPA. So it's the best, and it's cheap. I mean, you name all the different things about DLPA. Anyway, you can decide for yourself about each thing, whether you want to use it or not. 13:13 hours, paragraph 7:7 of the Arkapiwartu. Two divine numbers there. Look, 7:7. How appropriate is it that I can't seem to find a quote I believe might be attributable to Bertrand Russell? Quote, history creates confusion even in its own time. Look at what we're talking about, too. Confusion caused by misuse of substances, right? Or even misuse of things. We're misusing our bodies if we put poison into them, too. Not just misusing the substances, right? We're misusing our brains, right? That's the problem. It's misuse not just of the substance, but of the brain. Now, 13:28 hours with apologies. Mr. Russell is quoted as follows. Quote, religions which condemn the pleasures of sense drive men to seek the pleasures of power. Throughout history, power has been the vice of the ascetic. Now, that's just Bertrand Russell. That's not the Bible, okay? First of all, important to realize. An instructive point. It might teach us something. But let's see what he's saying here. Religions which condemn the pleasures of sense. Okay, what he's talking about, you know, people who are in religious organizations who condemn, I think he's talking about the condemnation of hedonism, you know, people seeking pleasure. But he calls it the pleasures of sense. And that's very misleading, that statement, pleasures of sense, because you can take pleasure in the functioning of your brain in a natural state without seeking any pleasure. You can take pleasure in just the normal state of your mind and the wonderful, beautiful functioning of a natural human brain. You can take pleasure in that. You really can, but you have to be taking time. You know, you have to have the time to do it. And you have to be in this, you know, positive mental state. And that's another thing DLPA can do, is it puts you in a positive frame of mind or a mental state that's positive. It doesn't just kill the pain, which it also does in a highly effective manner. But I'm not promoting DLPA as the answer to everything. I'm just saying for some people who have chronic pain, DLPA is absolutely fantastic stuff. And it's known only by very few people. So if that helps you, I hope it does. And I hope you will at least consider it. But which condemn the pleasures of sense? What is he saying? I think that's misleading. Because he could have been more specific about what he's saying. But he's generalized it. I mean, who condemns? There's no religion that condemns the pleasure of vision, which is a sense. Vision is one of the six senses. Or maybe there are more than six, but at least six senses. Right, without naming them all, you know, there's touch, you know, sight, hearing, smell, taste. You know, there's at least, are there five senses or six? No, there's five senses, that's right. Five senses, but some people say there's a sixth sense, which is something that's like you know, extrasensory perception, whatever, you know, some sixth sense. But the pleasures of sense he's talking about, which is too general, because he could be saying, well, I mean, what religion condemns the sight of the eyes? You know, like, come on. He's saying that, yeah, okay, there are certain sights of the eyes that are condemned by certain religions. You're not allowed to look at something like nudity or something, or you're not allowed to look at it. If it pleases your eyes in a certain way, then it's condemned. That's what he's talking about, the pleasures of sense in certain specific cases. But nobody condemns the pleasure of having human eyeballs and the use thereof when the eyeballs are functioning. Nobody condemns that. In fact, there are many people who don't have that gift. Thank you, by the way, Stevie. But, I mean, it's amazing. And those people who don't have that gift would probably not condemn the idea of having that ability to gain their vision or to use their vision if they had it. Drive men, it says, he goes on to say, seek the pleasures of power, because they condemn the pleasures of sense. Well, there are some people who just condemn pleasures. I don't think he knows anything about religion. Bertrand Russell is not a spiritual person. He's a person, I don't think so. He's an historian. And therefore he says, throughout history, power has been the vice of the ascetic. So people, the ascetic is someone who denies their pleasure, who denies themselves pleasure. That's what it is. They deny themselves pleasure of the physical flesh. That's what an ascetic is. They deny the physical, fleshly pleasures. They deny it to themselves. They deny themselves of it. They won't let themselves feel fleshly pleasures. You know, they think it's wrong. They're called ascetics. So he says that they allow themselves to have pleasure in power. How would he know? But anyway, that's his viewpoint. But obviously, power he's talking about pleasure of power. He's still talking about pleasure, and really the ascetic, I think, is someone who denies themselves of pleasure, period. Because it's a pleasure of the senses or of the flesh. If you feel it in your body when you're in your body, which is where we are when we're in our bodies, as we are in our bodies, you know, it seems like you can't get out of your body, so it's a fleshly pleasure if you feel the pleasure of power also. That's why I don't see that's all that useful. But let's see what the contrary might be, or what the Bible might say. It says in the Bible, by every kind of labor there comes to be advantage. That's from Proverbs 14:23, Young's literal translation. And it goes on, but merely the word of the lips tends to fall short. Excellent. That's right. Yeah, it's by labors that there comes to be advantage. Talking about it is kind of not all that great. It's not all that powerful. Okay, it's not as powerful, for sure. You know, people have to realize for themselves what the truth is, but you have to purify yourselves of the false teaching to get to the true teaching and allow it to enter in. And you won't understand spirituality until you purify, you know, which doesn't mean denying yourself pleasure. It just means not poisoning yourself. 14, 26 hours. Now, there are spiritual poisons, too. There's false teaching. That's what it's called. Does not old Sumerian writing look akin to Chinese more so than any other writing known of antiquity? That was the next statement I made at 14:26 hours. Then I said 15:11 hours. Pray compare the illustration Sumerian at right to this, which is something like in Chinese, consider silver governor. Not sure why I used that Chinese expression, but compare that to this illustration above here. The Sumerian, it kind of looks like these graphic wedges and lines. Is kind of what it's like, and that's what Chinese looks like too. Sort of. They're sort of similar. Quite a bit, actually. I mean, more so than other languages are similar to each other, I think. Which is interesting because they're both very ancient, right? Chinese and Sumerian, so it makes sense. They're probably connected somehow. An old Sumerian proverb, as on Wikipedia, in the article called Babylonia, as it was at the time I wrote this, apparently, says, "He who would excel in the school of scribes must rise with the dawn." I'll have to look that article up. And in the old version on Wikipedia, you can go back in time, look up the older versions, see if I can find that, if it's not in today's Wikipedia article, Wikipedia Babylonia. Let's look it up. He would excel. School of Scribes. Let's look it up. Is it there? There it is. "He who would excel in the school of the scribes must rise with the dawn." See that? An old Sumerian proverb. It's still there today on Wikipedia, which, by the way, we will now save because I don't want to lose it. I don't want to have it disappear in the future. Let's just save it and I'll get back. But let's put today's date on it, too. I was going to say I'll get back to it, but let's do it now. Today's date, 20, space, BabyloniaWikipedia.pdf, save it. And that's all for that. We clicked on that. Let's just close it. "He who would excel in the school of the scribes must rise with the dawn." It's interesting. You have to be up. Or it could say he's got to be awake at all times. That's another way. 1532 hours. Matthew 23 and 34 mention scribes in Jehovah's work. This is the last sentence. Or two, the last sentence, I think, in this paragraph, it's a quote from Matthew 23 and 34, and Jesus said, that's a quote from Jesus, I'm just thinking, yeah, I think that's what it is, let's see, let's click on it and see what we have. In Bible Gateway, what if we go back? Matthew, what's the next verse? Full chapter, there we go. 23 and 34. Yeah, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees," verse 29. Jesus is talking to the scribes and Pharisees. Yeah, and then he says, okay. As we just read, we just began to read. "Wherefore," he says, "behold, I send unto you prophets and wise men and scribes." He's talking to the scribes and Pharisees. And he says, "And some of them ye shall kill and crucify." It's the King James Version. "And some of them ye shall scourge in your synagogues." Or "shall ye scourge in your synagogues and persecute them." Persecute them. Persecute them from city to city. Shall ye persecute them from city to city? So persecution, importantly, we should realize that just because we are right does not mean that we will have a smooth path. In fact, we will have persecution. It's an essential part of having this correct understanding of things. Other people will persecute us. Doesn't mean everybody will persecute us, but there will be. I mean, we will have people who love truth just like us, who will find their way around into our company, you know. But there are also going to be, and it could be our family, our close family, who become the individuals that is in our close family. It could be they who become the ones who persecute us. Very oftentimes it is. I think that's a true statement. That's why Jesus said, you know, you'll have many fathers and mothers and brothers and sisters. But, let's look that one up. Let's see. Fathers and mothers. See if we can find that. No, okay, it's not there. Hang on. Maybe it's mother. Oh, it's mothers and brothers, he says. Yeah. It's mothers and brothers and sisters. Yeah, sorry. Because they said your mother and your brothers are outside. There, he said in Mark 10 and 30. Yeah. Okay. No one has left house or brothers or sisters or mother or father or children or fields for my sake and for the sake of the good news. This is Mark 10:29, and then 30, the verse 30, who will not get a hundredfold now in this period of time, houses and brothers and sisters and mothers and children and fields with persecutions, and in the coming system of things, everlasting life. Look at that. We get persecutions, but we get many, many, a hundredfold more in this period of time than we had before we were embracing the good news. Get a hundredfold more of brothers, sisters, mothers, houses, children, and fields. And we unfortunately get persecutions too, because there are people who resent the fact that we have, or they want to, they're actually protective of their way of life, which is to pollute their bodies or whatever it is they're doing wrong. Their corruption, they want to protect it, so they persecute to try to get us to conform to their way of doing things. However, we have the blessing also of everlasting life. That's the thing. But many that are first will be last, and the last first. That phenomenal verse, 31. Many that are first will be last, and the last first, which shows that it doesn't matter when you come to the understanding, you will be blessed greatly, even more than the ones who had the understanding before. In many cases, that's possible because of that scripture. November 20th, 2024 of the Common Era. Time is 22:05 hours, North American, Eastern Time. I'm Ward Green, and I love you very much. Thank you so much for listening and watching. And in my behalf, this is Sissy, and this is Star, saying bye for now. This was Chapter 7, Paragraph 7 of the article, The Ark of Urartu, The Orient Express, by yours truly. And we've received some instruction today regarding important things of spirituality.